Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, episode 62, the LeBanc edition. I'm Ben, coming to you from rainy Northern California, and on the line with us, so to speak, is Colin from currently hunkered down Sweden. Say hi, Colin.
What are we going to do when we get over 100 episodes?
We'll start the counter over again. Not with us this week because apparently his house was swept away by a tornado, and he is now in Oz, is Alex, who lives closer to the coast where it is apparently much windier than it is here, and it knocked out his power. So I'm hoping that by the end of this episode we'll have Alex's playoff prediction for the first round, and we'll, of course, talk about the potential Sharks first-round opponents, because by the time we get to our next podcast, the Sharks will have played a playoff game, which boggles my mind. So that's really going to be the theme of this week's show, I think, is the playoffs and the terrible, terrible shape the Sharks find themselves in heading into the playoffs, which already looked bleak if you listened to our episode last week, which of course got titled Circling the Drain. And then in the very first game this week, Joe Thornton's knee bent in ways that human knees are not supposed to bend, and he has been out ever since.
So yeah, it was which football player had that epic just knee disaster in the 90s? That was like a Lion or somebody, wasn't it?
Well, actually, when you started to say that, I thought of Navarro Bowman, who in the Niners' last sort of legitimate playoff run had his knee exploded by 13 guys landing on it, because that's just the NFL. The NFL is the world of exploding knees and concussed heads, in my opinion. So I don't think we can really focus on anything this week except, you know, some of the key topics that have come out of the Jumbo injury. None other than the best insider in the land, Kevin Kurz, immediately took this injury as an opportunity to suggest to the fan base, a fan base, by the way, already on the edge because the Sharks have not been playing well, to suggest that perhaps Jumbo is done with this injury. Yeah, and of course... Sorry, Colin, give me one second. Of course, that's stepping ahead a few steps for most Sharks fans, because this is a team that's still going into a playoff round in 4 days.
Yep. And that's the thing that I think, okay, I normally don't get on the bus with you when it comes to slamming Kurz full on. One, because I don't pay attention to his bullshit. So I let it exist. But the thing that I just find utterly ridiculous here is exactly that. We're going into a playoffs run to say, oh, this player has gotten an injury and is, you know, he's done forever. It's like, okay, he needs to literally be dead. if he's an NHL hockey player, he needs to, you know, be no heartbeat, flatline on some, you know, cooler somewhere, because medical science will patch him up and do whatever it needs to do to get that guy to skate the, you know, the 12 wins you need to run to the cup. I mean, Joe's going to show up. He's going to have, you know, whatever manner of brace around his knee and whatever, you know, amazing cocktail of drugs shot into his knee is required to keep him playing. And anyone who thinks that's not going to happen just doesn't watch the sport.
I mean, I think you make an excellent point to hockey players' extraordinary toughness. From the beginning, we don't really know the extent of that injury, right? Yep. We're all working off the same information, even now, even at the end of the week of action, in which we've been assured by the team that Jumbo is going to be available come the playoffs. Again, I'm skeptical. And I'm not just skeptical because, again, Jumbo's knee bent in ways it's not supposed to bend. I'm skeptical because this team has a history of lying about high-value injuries in the playoffs. As recently as the last round of the Cup Final last year, when Hurdle was day-to-day, in the same sense that you know, a truck that has careened off the road and jackknifed is day to day.
Slightly too topical, I think.
Right. I wasn't even thinking about that. That wasn't careening. That was driven in a very purposeful fashion. Thoughts, of course, go out to those in Sweden affected by that horrible
action. Yeah, the assholes who went Corey Perry with a truck.
Yeah. So Kurz is saying these things in the context earlier in the week of no medical information, right?
Yep.
And also, as you say, not just ignoring hockey players and their desire to be on the ice, but Jumbo's desire to be on the ice, which is obvious that, he could have torn ligaments and be attempting to skate. That doesn't help the Sharks that much, but he probably will try to do that.
So there's actually a weird twist on this subject, and it's something that we were discussing when we were seeing the first game without Thornton, which is, does an injured Joe slow down the first line's pace even more?
Does it actually slow down that line? And I'm not sure, but go on.
Well, yeah. If you're being extra Ben today, then sure. but when we were all respectively watching the Vancouver games at our various times, the first line speed was the big thing that we all picked up on. And actually, the overall just sort of team tempo was something we all picked up on, and that it had noticeably increased, and that we were playing at a more frenetic pace and trying to, you know, make quicker decisions and just keep the game going at a faster tempo. And it was like, okay, we don't have Joe pulling the puck to the corner, trying to draw in three defensemen and just slowing the game down. Hmm. Well, now we've got an injured Joe, hobbled.
Yep.
You know, if he's skating, does in this modern, very fast NHL, does he slow down the game to the point where we sort of lose that magic?
Yeah, the great thing about Jumbo, and even though I think he has slowed down a bit as this season has gone on, maybe because of fatigue, maybe because of an existing injury, who knows, is, you know, he could get on his horse when he needed to, and he could still move. And with a knee injury like this, I can't see him being able to back check.
Yep.
I can't really see him being able to forecheck. And DeBoer's system it's sort of critical that your number one center be able to do those two things. And so I'm skeptical that whatever happened to his knee, a sprain, you know, a meniscus tear, the utter destruction of every ligament that exists in not just his knee, but all men named Joe's knees because of that hit, that in four, the space of, you know, of time that it takes to play four games, he's going to be ready to go at all.
Yep.
Let alone be able to do what we need him to do as the number one center. Now, this would be a problem for the Sharks if it was just Jumbo. But this also happens in the context where Couture is still not back in games and is going to wear some sort of half cage when he does, and doesn't seem to be particularly upbeat about his chances of getting in to a game before the playoffs or even in an early game in the playoffs. So this is now a team that was already stumbling towards the finish line, going into a playoff series against a younger, faster team, most likely, without your top two centers.
Yep. And, I mean, let's think, if either of these guys or both of them actually do show up, and for whatever freak statistical reason, we end up facing Anaheim. That goes from dream first round that we all love, because watching us, you know, battle out with Anaheim is always, you know, great, especially if Perry gets drilled into the boards. But that's also a team that will headhunt us. I mean, they have no compunction about
knee hunt, as the case may be.
Exactly. I mean,
yeah.
When you have, you know, really savage rivalries like, you know, Montreal and Boston, for instance, there is no friendliness on the ice there. And if somebody knows you've got a weak joint, you've got 12 skaters who are just going to be going for that.
Well, you have one skater who's going to be going for that. His name is Corey Perry. And he's syphilis on skates. So,
well, let's also accept that the player that my wife likes to call Get Slapped also will headhunt Thornton, especially Thornton.
Getzloff likes to slash, though. That's his thing.
Well, a slash to a weak knee is a pretty dangerous thing. Yeah. And, I mean, it's scary. It makes me really want to face Edmonton because, we got Lucic and we have a bunch of other bastards on that team. But I at least have a little bit more confidence that they're just not going to start the series going for injuries.
Yeah, I don't know. I was worried this team couldn't beat any of the other Western Conference opponents before Jumbo's knee exploded. So I'm doubly, triply, quadruply, quintuply skeptical now that the Sharks could beat the Barracuda in a playoff game.
So are you saying that this is like we are a first round exit now?
Yeah, I think I said that last week, actually, before Jumbo's knee exploded. So I mean, certainly crazier things have happened, I guess, maybe in the first round. But
so as I sort of mentioned last week, we have a roster that should be able to bounce back because we don't have Jumbo or Couture waiting in the wings to just sort of show up and do amazing things. But we've got a bunch of third, second line tweeners who could break out.
I guess my issue with that statement is that, if teams with a bunch of second and third line guys could even make the playoffs, then the Jets would be in the playoffs and Vancouver would be in the playoffs, right? So, this is a team that has lost whatever their current ceiling is. And I'm not sure Jumbo of this year is the same as the guy who went into the playoffs last year. I mean, just his point totals would say he's not, and the eye test would say he's not. So he's already, a step below what we had going into the playoffs last year. So he's out. Your number one center. You don't replace the number one center.
No.
Couture is out. When he comes back, he's not going to be at 100%. That's your second line center. Hurdle is not ready to be Jumbo. And in a lot of ways, he'll never be Jumbo.
Nope.
But if Couture was back, that's at least, and 100%, that's at least, a couple competent second line centers running around. And teams have gotten pretty far in the playoffs with two really good second line centers. Just look at last year's St. Louis Blues.
Yeah.
So, but that's not where we are, right? And until we can see Couture on the ice, there's no way to say. And a team with two really good second line centers can beat the Edmonton Oilers. But that's just not the year we're having, Colin. This is a year that seems to be designed to pay us back for last year's success and watching Todd McClellan leave San Jose with a playoff series victory is going to be really, really difficult on Sharks fans, I think.
For the greater fan base, you're going to get all the people saying, oh God, we should never have gotten rid of McClellan. But let's face it, when he moved on this podcast, we were saying, McClellan's going to give Edmonton, one or two outstanding years, maybe as many as three, if other teams don't react and, his ridiculous, forwards, just continue to be ridiculous. But, I still think McClellan can't adapt his way through a series.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think Edmonton's going further than a single round anyway.
Edmonton gets to, piss on the grave of Thornton's career and then gets to go home.
Yeah, they'll get run over by Chicago or Minnesota or what have you. I'm not at this point, I'm not even sure who the class of the West is anymore, given that the Sharks
you mentioned Chicago, and one of the things that you look around the West and it's like, okay, every team is still skating their top line, still skating their star, still like pushing to try to get the best spot possible. You have Chicago who are like, let's just rest all our top defensemen. Right. Let's rest as many people as we can. Let's let our rookies get a couple games at the end of the season. I mean, they are sauntering into the playoffs, and I mean, that is the scary team.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they probably scare me more than Minnesota does. I don't believe in Randy Carlyle in Anaheim, so they're going to flame out at some point. I don't believe in McClellan in Edmonton, and I don't think a one-man team gets further than the second round anyway. And that's really what Edmonton is. Well, two-man if you count Cam Talbot, who has really carried them.
Yeah.
And obviously, St. Louis and Calgary are what they are. Bad teams.
I mean,
so
well, they're bad teams who can knock off a better team.
Sure. Probably Calgary for sure. St. Louis, I'm less certain of. Nashville, who knows what they are going into the playoffs. They made it. I guess let me bring a bit of bright sideism to this podcast for a second. The LA Kings are not in the playoffs, everybody.
Yeah, fuck the Kings.
So that makes me happy and makes Will Wheaton sad. So
really, Wheaton is a Kings fan?
Oh God, yes. You didn't know that?
But what about Wheaton's Law? I mean, you can't be a Kings fan and obey Wheaton's Law. If you're a Kings fan, you're automatically a dick.
Well, I guess it's one of those paradoxes. But yeah, he's a huge Kings fan.
Wow, cognitive dissonance.
Yeah. I mean, so the Kings are out. The matchups aren't set because we still have some wiggle room as to who's going to finish first in the Pacific. We know it won't be the Sharks.
Yeah.
It will be either Anaheim or Edmonton. I think Edmonton has a chance at it. If they win out and Anaheim loses, I honestly don't know who owns the season tiebreaker. And let's be clear, the NHL playoff brackets are ridiculous and stupid, and I refuse to learn them anyway because they're set up so dumb.
And what let's face it, they're going to change in a year anyways.
Well, maybe. What I do know is that the Sharks are going to play whoever comes in second in the Pacific because they're locked down in the third spot in the Pacific. So Calgary will come in fourth, which means that San Jose either loses to Edmonton or Anaheim in the first round. You know, pending Jumbo Joe coming back and being like, just kidding, and his knee is perfect. And he's also 5 years younger. and Kocher comes... Coacher comes back and says, I was also kidding, and then his jaw falls off.
Yeah. So if Joe's 5 years younger, does he still have the beard?
No. No, in fact, he has an inverse beard. All that beard crawls up to his head and is now his hair.
Okay.
And he just has like a fro.
And what are you drinking tonight?
Just beer, unfortunately. Oh. So... With that said, you know, I even before Jumbo's injury, I was in a place last week and on the podcast saying that I don't think the Sharks can make it out of the first round, and now I'm not sure the Sharks win a game, particularly given their performance against Edmonton last night, particularly in the third period.
The thing that's really chewing on my butt right now, looking at the season that we've just finished, or you know, we're a game from finishing. You look at, okay, Sorensen seems to be a regular player now. We spent so much time not validating our rookies, not validating our new blood. And now it kind of feels like we're scrambling to find those players. And you know, has Sorensen played enough NHL to really sort of adapt to the play level here? Like, I think of his penalty shot.
Yeah, well.
And, I mean, that's a penalty. Like, if for people who didn't watch, it was a very disrespectful penalty shot attempt by somebody. It was as though he didn't expect the talent of the goaltender he was facing. When you're in the NHL, you know, there are, as like Ben likes to say, league average goaltenders. But that average is pretty damn good.
Speaking of which, Martin Jones has not been a league average goaltender in the last few weeks. I actually don't think there was anything intentionally wrong with Sorensen's shot. I just didn't think he got under it the way he wanted to. I thought he was trying to go top corner and didn't get it, and thus put it right in Cam Talbot's glove.
That's
better
kind of my
men. Better men than Sorensen have not connected on many, many shootout attempt, so I'm not going to try to read too much into that, I don't think. I think, you know, ultimately, there's a few things that have doomed this team down the stretch. So let me go through my list.
We are so bright.
So Michael Boedker never really fixed himself and was a terrible signing. Joel Ward died on the ice at some point this year and nobody's noticed. Michael Haley still is drawing into the lineup despite the fact that whatever elixir he took about a month ago to look good for a couple of weeks seems to have worn off. LeBanc and Meyer both hit rookie walls. Meyer much quicker than LeBanc did, and so they haven't broken out. Tomáš Hertl missed a quarter plus of the season and has never really settled back into a scoring role. Patrick Marleau has been better than I think we expected, but can't carry this team because he's just not equipped to do it. Pavelski has taken a step back this year. He's a little bit slower and his shot has been a little less accurate. And what do you expect? He's an early 30s, you know, forward, and he should have died on the ice years ago, really. Let's see, who have I not slagged yet? Melker Carlson's been great. Donskoy's made – actually, I wanted to talk about this, and I guess I will take this moment to. I'm going to go ahead and give a mea culpa. I said last summer that I really hoped that the Sharks would move quickly to sign Donskoy to something like a $2.5 million contract to lock him down based on how he looked in the back half of last year in the playoffs. Yep. And the Sharks didn't. And they're looking like they made the right decision because he's – I'm not even sure he's an NHL player anymore.
No. Okay, that's a little too rough.
Really? How many points does he have this year?
I mean, how many – what's the point distribution across the other 11 skaters out there?
That only matters in as much as – you know, if he either pushes play or he doesn't. He either pushes scoring or he doesn't, right? And he's not. So, but, you know, yes, maybe his line mates have let him down a little bit, but...
Yeah, his line mates for, like, the next 5 minutes who are going to change in the next 5 minutes who...
He has 17 points in 60 games. 17 points.
It seems to be our team average. I mean, we have just been the blender squad this year.
I'm not blaming the blender. I'm blaming the player. Player's part of the squad and needs to drive play. Has he looked like the player to you that he looked like in the playoffs last year?
Nobody on our team has looked like the player that we had in the playoffs last year.
And yet, for most of the year, the Sharks were looking like a team that was going to finish with 100 points. 100-plus points. So it's clearly a good team, and Donskoy is not doing particularly much on that good team. Right?
Okay. I mean, I kind of feel like we were a team that we're really capitalizing off a couple, you know, more or less gimmicks and doing really well with it and not actually building depth and, you know, that strong cohesion that lets you take a 2-goal lead and actually...
Let me list the players that have more points than Jonas Donskoy. David Schlemko in the same number of games. Kevin LeBanc in 6 fewer games. Chris Tierney in 19 more games. Tomáš Hertl in about 11 fewer games. Yeah, 11 fewer games. Melker Carlson in about the same number of games. Michael Boedker. Boedker.
Okay.
Mark Edward Vlasic has more points. Joel, I have been a corpse for half the year. Ward has 12 more points.
Okay, so Ward and Boedker make your point for you because you're listing off a bunch of other players who I'm guessing the majority of their points are, hey, I happened to be on the ice when Thornton, Pavelski, and Burns were there.
I guess what I'm really saying here is what we thought Donskoy was going to be, particularly in his second year with more experience, more time on the ice, whatever, was going to be a guy who could get half a point a game, right? A legit second line player.
Yeah.
And he's not.
But there's also the whole sophomore slump phenomenon. So
I guess he's older. So should he really have that slump? I mean, Carlson, you know, he didn't look like the same guy in his second year compared to where he was, but he also didn't get time with the Joes in his second year. I guess at the end of the day, he's also a minus player. We expected him to be more defensively responsible than he's been. And again, plus minus, not a great stat, but it does mean that when he was on the ice, his team has been outscored. That could be the combination of players he's with. Like maybe he ended up with Dylan all the time. I don't know.
Dylan hasn't been that bad this season though.
No, he hasn't. He's looked better with a better partner the whole year than Roman Pulock. I guess, but if we want to ask the question of why are the Sharks where they are right now? Why aren't the Sharks better than they are right now? There have been a lot of injuries this year. Obviously, that is typified by the fact that we're going into the playoffs without our top two centers. But it also is about guys who've taken steps back, small steps like Joe Pavelski, slightly bigger steps like Jumbo, small steps, I guess, overall like Joel Ward. He's had an okay second half of the season. Never took a step forward like Bodker. Didn't take a step forward like we hoped, like Hurdle.
And a complete lack of team chemistry. I mean, that's the most frustrating thing to watch.
I hear you, and you've talked about the line grinder a lot. Again, until 10 games ago, this was a team on pace to get 100 points. That's not a bad team. That implies that there's some amount of chemistry. That implies that something is working. One of those things that wasn't working hasn't been working, I think we can say at this point, is Jonas Donskoy.
Yeah, I'm. You made the point, Bob Ken Ward. I'm on your team. But my point is, I'm going to go back to, you know, we went from a team that should have had, you know, every tool imaginable in our toolbox to really only having, you know, a hammer and a Phillips head screwdriver. You know, the hammer being Burns and the Phillips head being Joe and Joe. And then, you know, Couture coming in every once in a while and just saying, you know, I got this. And we had a really hard time manufacturing wins and an even worse time defending leads. So we were, in a way, even though we've got one of the tougher divisions out there, I feel like we were just riding a couple tricks to get to where we wanted to go, and we weren't, you know, building a solid foundation to get through the grind that is the playoffs.
I mean, I don't know. I'll reiterate what I said last week, which is we didn't think this team was going to be going to the Stanley Cup Finals going into the playoffs last year either. Not that I'm saying that they're going to suddenly wake up and go there this year, because they're just not equipped to do it. Last year was, for me anyway, was more about the fact that they had to play the Kings in the first round, and I didn't think they could get past them. At times this is a team that has forced things back to Brent Burns and hoped that he could solve all their problems. And again, that's partly because the other guys haven't stepped up to provide other solutions, whether it's on the power play or not. Yeah. I don't know if that is entirely because Jumbo is slower and Pavelski is slower, and so that top unit just is not as good. It might be. I'm not a coach. I don't watch tape. I couldn't tell you for sure. It certainly seems plausible that's a big part of the problem. But it's also the fact that that second power play unit hasn't done anything all year. Year. And again, it's power play malpractice to an extent, because any power play that has Mark Edward Vlasic on it isn't taking itself seriously. It's not.
Poor Pickles.
It's not. The guy is not a – he shouldn't be on a power play. He shouldn't be on the ice within 5 minutes of a power play. That's not
– So the word that was missing there for everybody was specialist. Vlasic is not a power play specialist by any measure.
I'll never understand, because he doesn't have a shot. He's not a particularly great passer. And this is your opportunity when, you know, you have five players on the ice and they have four plus the goalie to try to complete some passes and get some shots off from the point with a little bit more accuracy and power, because you got some space. And so you put a slow-ass defensive specialist on the ice? Really? That's your solution? And it's especially mind-boggling because almost every team in the league has figured out that four forwards and a defenseman are the right power play deployment at this point, that there were inefficiencies there. And even the Sharks have figured that out when you look at their first unit.
Yep.
Because it's been four guys in Burns. Okay, so technically that's five forwards, but we'll leave that alone for a second. But the first unit has been four forwards and a defenseman forever, since last year.
So
yeah, go ahead.
I'm feeling a little dirty here because, you know, I need to caveat this saying I am still very much a DeBoer fan. Like, I like what he's been doing. I just feel like he's having that frustration of trying to make the right decisions and not getting the rewards that we sort of think he should be getting. But part of this feels like it's DeBoer's whole, if a player doesn't fit the mold I'm expecting, I'd rather just do something safe. And like, okay, so there's no forward that he trusts to be that blue line forward other than Couture or Pavelski. That very short stint where Marlowe was doing that.
Sure.
And, you know, he never gives other players any sort of look there. And he's too scared to move Pavelski from the slot. So it's like, okay, well, Marlowe or Couture has to be that point forward.
Right.
And it just, it feels, it's my frustration of you have a really deep pantry of players and all you're making is sloppy joes.
Yeah. Well, I really like that analogy because it is deeply, deeply uncreative. Yeah. Right. And that has, in some sense, you know, that's what the Sharks have been successful at when they've been successful is deeply, deeply uncreative hockey, right? Yeah. Get the puck into the get it back to the point, put it on net through screens or get it into the slot, as any way you can and see what happens. And on the other side, block as many shots as you can, win faceoffs. And you know, I think the Sharks have been so variant this year in the quality of their play at times because so many of those deeply uncreative fundamental things they've not been particularly good at. I don't think they've blocked shots as well this year as they did last year. And of course, when they do block a shot, it breaks a jaw or an ankle or what have you. And they haven't been particularly good at face-offs. And again, who, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter that much. It's a single battle. But if you're counting...
Wait, Ben. You can't take away the commentator's favorite stat. You can't just blow it away like that. Face-offs have to matter because they talk about them every game.
Well, I mean, they matter just as much as any puck battle. That's all. I mean, and puck battles do matter, right? Like, we get mad when Haley flails into the wall instead of trying to get the puck back or what have you. Yeah. It matters when, you know, Marlowe waves sort of weakly at a guy he could have body checked. Or it matters when, as happened in the last game, and I made this joke on Twitter, Michael Bodker tries to do too much and weakly gives away puck along the boards. The story of the 2016-2017 San Jose Sharks.
And yeah, like you mentioned Marlowe not checking somebody. I don't care about that. I care about Marlowe not board pressing people. I care about Marlowe trying to, you know, press the puck against the boards.
Right.
And not actually fighting to move it forward. I care about the fact that our team hasn't been reinforcing and supporting the board play when we used to. Last season, you'd have three Sharks at every board skirmish and we were winning the majority of them. Now we're just sort of falling back and trying to play like zone defense. And I don't know. It's weird. I don't understand how, you know, you look at the talent we have on the Barracuda. You look at how various people like O'Regan have come up. Yeah. Alex, I'm stealing your thing. Have come up and done quality, like had sparks of goodness and then just sort of been chucked back into the CUDA. And then when we do sort of find rookies that we like what they're doing, we think they belong up here, we don't ever really give them consistency, or worse, we don't try to find their magic, you know, partner duos like we were doing last season. And we don't find that, you know, two players who work really well together plus one that has also become a league standard.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. There's so little.
I mean, it just hasn't worked. And it never has worked consistently enough that DeBoer clearly has felt comfortable enough to keep them together.
Yeah.
And again, like, yeah, that's partly on DeBoer probably for switching things up faster than he should. But it's also because guys simply haven't made the case that they should be where we want them to be. There's been an alarming lack of consistency sort of among everybody this year, except for maybe Burns, Pavelski, and Couture on the offensive side. And Marlowe, though he's consistently inconsistent, and that's the story of his career. You know, because the defense has been good and relatively balanced, meaning the defense men. Yeah. And where this team has fallen apart is when the forwards can't figure out where they're supposed to be for the most part.
Yep.
It's something that I just don't see, not just getting fixed with one more game to play in the season.
No.
But getting fixed to the point where this team can play, you know, highest quality hockey without, again, their two best centers. And no number of call-ups is going to change that, again, because you don't replace Jumbo or Couture.
No. Well, I would say you specifically can't replace Jumbo. Couture is, like, let's face it, his amazingness is his hockey IQ and his ability to put the puck where, you know, his very good mind sees opportunities, but he also just empties his entire everything onto the ice when he feels he needs to. And, you know, I would love to see LeBanc or, you know, Carlson or Meyer or somebody just go out there, you know, go full berserker and do something like Couture. Like, Couture feels more replaceable and ultimately more tradable than Jumbo, but
at this point, the thing is that Couture is the best two-way player on the Sharks, bar none.
Yep.
He's the third best scorer, despite the fact he's missed the last, you know, five or six games at this point. I mean, he's got two more points than Jumbo has in six fewer games. So I don't know that I would necessarily agree with you that Couture is tradable at this point. I mean, fast forward a year from now and Couture is our top line center from a talent perspective, because I don't know that Hurdle's ready for that.
Yeah, but is he also a team leader?
I don't think Jumbo's really ultimately the right leader for this team either. And again, this goes back to
an example. Like, I think
players from work ethic, sure, but not necessarily from like how you comport yourself on the ice.
But that's the thing we've always been making a point for, why Pavelski should have been captain for seasons. Yeah,
exactly. But you can say the same thing about Couture. He's not necessarily like a leader of men with how he talks about things, but his example is one we certainly would like to see the younger guys pick up of
really?
Of sacrificing yourself for the team.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
absolutely.
Sure. But for the last five seasons, I've always seen Couture as, you know, screw you guys, I'll get it done myself.
And well, there's a little bit of that selfishness in any player who's blocking shots come hell or high water. It is absolutely about, look at what I'm giving up for the team.
I'm more talking about the offensive side of things. I'm talking about the times when he basically forgets that there's four other guys with him and, you know, goes to make the play himself. Like, he embodies on the offensive side of play the Sharks' worst habit of, I'll do it by myself.
I guess I always thought of the Sharks' worst habit as being, I'm going to pass this puck despite the fact I should probably put it on net. And so I'd rather have somebody like Couture decide to try to bury the puck occasionally and go for the, you know, worst case, maybe you get a rebound off of that. I wish again that more Sharks would put a low shot off the goddamn goalie's
oh yeah. I'll definitely agree with that.
And Couture's probably the only guy who will make that play on this team, because everybody else is looking for the, you know, again, like that, well, I might be able to get a rebound, but if I get this perfect pass through three defenders' skates to that other guy, and he gets the goal, then I'm the good guy, and I'm like Jumbo. And
okay,
it never works. It never works.
So let's compare to last season going into the playoffs, because right. It kind of feels like the major delta between last season and this season is we started last season just being like, oh man, if we just get to sniff the playoffs, I'll be happy.
Yep.
And you know, coming into this season, we're just like cup run or bust. You know, this is the team. We shouldn't have signed Boddicker, but the rest of the team, you know, here we go. Now we're basically exactly where we were last season, just being like, oh man.
Well,
I hope
I'm not so sure I was ready to say right at the beginning of the year that this was going to be a team that went for the cup. I do think I said that it would be a lock for the playoffs because the Pacific was bad. I'll give you that. And hey, I'm not wrong. They were a lock for the playoffs, and the Pacific was pretty bad, or at least the bottom of it was. I think the difference is, again, I was pessimistic going into last year's playoffs, but there was a big difference. Well, and we didn't know it was a difference because Vlasic was hurt.
Yep.
And Jones had looked shaky, and they were playing the Kings. So when I did my calculus in my head as to where I thought the Sharks were going to manage to do in that situation, and also not thinking about the impact that the Martinez injury was going to have on the Kings defense, because it definitely had an impact on that series. I just didn't think the Sharks, that added up to a Sharks win. Turned out Vlasic was healthier than we knew. Turned out the rest of the team was healthier than we knew, and in a way that they generally had not been going into the playoffs. Their key injury, honestly, was Hurdle getting hurt in the cup final.
Yep. Right.
And up to that point, they were healthy, energized. They ended up running into teams that they could beat for various reasons, and that was great. They couldn't beat the Penguins, and that was bad. The difference now is this was a better constructed team than we thought last year's team was, and it was on pace to be really, really good. And then something happened, like the team got the flu or syphilis or mumps or whatever across the board, and then two key injuries, and they're inexplicable and you can't do anything about them, right? Your top two centers.
Yep.
So anybody who predicts a shark, now I'm not going to say that the Sharks can't win a playoff round, because crazy shit happened in the playoffs, and maybe Jones gets those, you know, four strings together, three or four amazing games like we saw him do in the playoffs last year. And if he does that, the Sharks can win a series. You're going to ask me, will they win a series? And I say no. How do you overcome what they're being asked to overcome?
Just because I'm on the conversational teeter-totter with you, I'll take the other side. I mean, I still see the potential. Like, I'm still the Sharks fan holding his breath for all the gears to just click into place and to see the team that we've kind of been waiting to see all season, and that we've gotten glimpses of here and there. And let's face it, that was a team that was seeing really great play from lines that did not have Logan or Joe on them.
But there, even during those runs, those are two of your top four scorers. And well, those guys were contributing.
So the thing that you really need to point out is during those runs, we had our top lines canceling out the other team's top line.
There's that too,
because that's the most important part. Is you need to have lines that can go and shut down a Taze line. You know, you need to be able to shut down a McDavid line.
Yeah, and what you're really asking now is let's say that things go the way I think they're going to go, and Jumbo doesn't play. Jumbo is day to day in DeBoer's head.
Yeah,
and Couture does come back and isn't super tentative. You know, knowing that his, you know, I can't imagine putting myself on the ice with the damage that puck did to his face, and know the pain in his head, and then think about taking a puck off of a helmet with all of that damage and how much pain that could cause. Like, I can't imagine, because it's got to be horrible.
It's terrifying.
And it also, as well as being a horrible pain when you have to move your head in a way you don't expect, or you do get that puck to go off your head, the terror of that puck, right, doing what you don't want it to do, which is glance off your head, because it probably hurts to turn your head, it probably hurts to move too fast, and on and on and on, right?
Yeah.
So let's say Kocher does come back. He's not going to be at 100%. So that means that you need Tomas Hertl to shut down Connor McDavid for games at a time.
That's a tall order.
It is a tall order. And I'm not saying Tomas Hertl is incapable of it, because Tomas Hertl has evolved into a pretty darn good two-way center for a guy who was putting pucks through his legs over, you know, the shoulders of goalies in his first season before Dustin Brown exploded his knee. Yeah. So I'm not going to say that Tomas Hertl can't do that, but you're asking a lot of a guy who is a third year player who's missed a lot of games.
Let's face it, who is injury prone?
Yeah, that too. You're asking him to hold up in that grind as well, with Milan Lucic probably hoping to get a shot at his knee as well.
Yep.
So, you know, I joked to Alex offline, because he said that he's going to miss at least one of the Sharks playoff games, that they're, I said he's going to miss one quarter of the Sharks playoff experience this year. and that's not to say that I expect a sweep, but this could easily end up as a sweep. Given that the Sharks are entering with zero confidence, missing players, they've historically been fragile. DeBoer's the least creative coach in the league. They're gonna play Michael Haley for no good reason, but partially because of the injuries. And the three guys that, you know, you kind of keep hoping will just somehow bust out of their rookie shells
aren't.
They're not going to.
They haven't yet. But that's me just trying to counterbalance the vinegar over there. So the thing, though, is I will say I think we at least win one series, and I'll reevaluate that opinion in the second game.
You know, I mean, that's the thing. As you say, Colin, I mean, we haven't seen the Sharks play their last game of the season yet. They play tomorrow, I think, Calgary, right?
But honestly, besides the numbers, I do not think we're going to see a Christmas miracle in that game. What I do think is going to happen, I think we're losing our first playoff game. Like, flat out, I think we lose that game, and I think we lose it like 4-2, for instance.
Yeah. Well, the Sharks are going to end up on the road, because they're not going to have home ice.
And we haven't been the road team that we were before. I think we lose our first playoff game 4-2, and it's what we do in the second game that lets me either, you know, stick to my guns or join you over in vinegar land and, you know, just sit there starting to predict what sort of off-season miracle signings we could do. But maybe for us to just have a little ray of sunshine, we can all just say, gee, I like that Hansen guy.
Yeah, it's funny you're going to mention that. So I guess we should briefly talk about the week that was. So the Sharks beat the horrific Canucks unconvincingly twice, lost Jumbo in the first game. And then, of course, had to come home. Well, I guess they came home to play the Canucks, and then played Edmonton last night and lost 4-2. That was a game that was the Sharks led going into the second, was tied 2-2 going into the third, as I recall. And then just missed coverages and gave away a hat trick to a bad player, Milan Lucic. And in that same vein, you know, failed when it mattered, right? Had a playoff style game going. Burns' shot to go ahead 2-1 was exactly the sort of goal the Sharks need to be successful in the playoffs. And then they coughed up a lead that they couldn't really afford to cough up. And you know, as you mentioned, you know, there was an opportunity there to go up 3-1 when one of the Edmonton players hugged Sorensen really, really hard to the ice, and Sorensen didn't convert the you know, the breakaway. what do they call it? Penalty shot. Thanks.
Again, like, so you say he was trying to pick the top corner, which, you know, watching the replay, I'll agree with. But again, you have to respect the fact that you need a Patrick Kane release if you're going to just skate straight up at the goaltender and just try to eye fake him one way and shoot the other. No, you have to have that lightning fast release, or you need to do something with your body or how you move the puck to draw the goalie to one side and create space. He just took a straight run and tried to snap it home, and no, he hasn't earned that right yet. And to me, that's just league experience.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, he's not a young guy. I mean, he came into the league here 24 or whatever. So,
and watching Swedish hockey, the goalies here are not that great. Like, there's some high scoring games that happen here that really it's because the guy who should be in net for that team is in the NHL.
Yeah. At this point, you know, the team has a lot of guys who could be a third or fourth liner, and just not enough that can play that top six, bottom, you know, effective bottom nine, or sorry, top nine sort of role, you know, either because they haven't shown what we thought they were going to show, or they just are rookies and this happens, you know, and you're asking a lot of a guy drafted in the sixth round to be a top six guy in the first place in his first year. You're even asking a lot of a guy who is drafted ninth and is in his second, well, first pro year, really.
It's bleak, and it's really easy to get extra bleak about it. But you know we're Sharks fans, so we are committed to believing the impossible.
I hate to say it, but I think that it's just not the Sharks' year. The injuries are sort of you can't get around them, right? Like, again, last year we didn't think it was going to be the Sharks' year to go, you know, three rounds. You win three rounds and go into the fourth round of the playoffs and have a chance at that cup. But we also were trying to be realistic about it, that they were playing an opponent that is really, really good and has historically had their number, and Vlasic was hurt and Jones hadn't shown that much except that he was a league average goalie. Well, here we are again. Well, Jones is a league average goalie at best, except if he gets whatever got into him in the playoffs. And now this time the injuries are real.
Yeah. And we don't have Reimer in our back pocket.
There's
a lot of confidence that came from, like, okay, well, if Jones shits the bed, we have Reimer.
Yeah.
I can't make that same statement about Dell.
I guess I'm okay with Dell. He's been pretty good this year. It doesn't really matter, though, because Dell's not going to sniff a start in the playoffs anyway.
Nope.
So let's go ahead and start to wrap this up. Here's my question to you. Since we know the Sharks are not winning the Cup this year, and I'm not going to do that stupid three-star thing that we've been doing for 2 years now and has ultimately bored the crap out of me and probably our listeners, who's your Cup favorite, Colin?
it hurts so much.
You're gonna pick Anaheim, aren't you?
No.
Okay.
I'm picking the Fucks. I'm picking the Hawks.
Blackhawks. Okay.
Yeah. I think the Hawks are gonna come from the West, and I want the Caps to come from the East. I would like to see a Caps Hawks Stanley Cup. I hate myself for saying that. I really do. And I want the Caps to win. I want to see Ovi lift the cup. I'd like to see Ovi lift the cup with the Sharks, but, you know, that's not happening.
I don't trust Washington further than I could throw Randy Carlyle.
Yeah, neither
not
do
that
I.
There's a connection between them, but he's fat enough that I wouldn't be able to throw him.
Yeah. yeah, I don't think the Cards are in the Caps' favor. I just that's the team that I could that's the team other than the Sharks who if they won, you know, I could clap and I could be happy for them. And as much as I hate to admit, the Hawks play really entertaining hockey. So I mean that's a really good cup final for me. Sure. I don't want the Pens to make it. I don't want a California team, you know, I don't want Anaheim to make it. I certainly don't want to see Edmonton there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just man, why'd you have to drag me down into the darkness with you?
So you pick Chicago.
Yeah, I pick Chicago.
I think that's a pretty good pick. I think they've got a good shot of making the cup final out of the West. Because I honestly look at the rest of these teams and they're all fatally flawed.
Yep.
Minnesota because their coach melts down in the playoffs. Anaheim because it's Carlyle and he melts down when he tries to work a toaster. Edmonton because, again, they're a one-man team, two-man team if you include Talbot. And McClellan's a bad coach. And then who cares about St. Louis, Calgary, or Nashville? I'll never figure out why Nashville is so bad this year, but I'm just going to assume that they really are. I think the most likely team to find a way to make it out of the East is I'm going to pick Boston.
Ew.
Because they were a team that was really, really good all year if you looked at their fundamentals, and then that coaching change woke them up. There's an argument to be said that they were starting to wake up before the coaching change anyway. And I think they could beat anybody. I think Pittsburgh is just as likely to come out of that. I don't trust Washington at all. But I'll pick Boston because I don't want to pick Pittsburgh either. Sorry, man. I'm not saying I'm happy about it. It's sure as hell not going to be Ottawa. and whoever squeaks their way in between Toronto and Tampa Bay is going to find their way out really fast. So
it's just feeding a team of
exactly.
Which I mean, there might be some irony for me saying that, which is also a bit bitter.
Yeah. So I think I will pick it. If let's say that's our matchup. Let's say it's Boston and Chicago.
Boston, Chicago. You know, Chara hitting Patrick Kane in open ice. That could make my season.
Make the bars safe for women everywhere.
Yeah, and you know, with the Bruins colors, Chara could look like a taxi.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if either team came away with it out of that. So any last thoughts about the Sharks playoffs before we never did get predictions from Alex. So we'll just say that Alex predicts that the Sharks will win the cup.
Oh no, he hasn't hid his Boston love.
No.
He's made no secret of that.
Alex has told me reliably that the Sharks are going all the way, regardless of injuries. That they're going to sweep Edmonton in four games, and then from there, I don't know who though. Without knowing the bracket, I can't really go further than that. But that it's going to be San Jose Sharks wheeling Jumbo's desiccated corpse out of the ice to touch the cup first. With Tomas Hertl scoring 40 goals in 14 games.
The only way our team is doing any sweeping this year is if they take up curling.
Yeah. Well, you and I know that, but Alex is a little nuts. So.
Yeah, he is.
Anyway, so that's our pessimistic podcast of this week. We hope we'll come to you next Friday and the Sharks will have magically somehow won the first game. Of their playoff series. Colin doesn't believe they'll do it, and I'm sure as heck not going to go out on the line with it. But I wouldn't stop you all from putting a few bucks on the Sharks if you want to somehow make surprise money when Jumbo, again, comes out and skates onto the ice with a bionic knee, and Coach Schur has had his head replaced with a robot head.
Saying 3D printing is going to shake the same Sharks here.
Sure. Yes, definitely. So that is our podcast for the week. You can find us at circlingthecup.com. You can find us on Twitter at circlingthecup. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/circlingthecup. You can find us on iTunes, and I'm told reasonably that you can find us on Android somehow, but I still haven't done what I'm supposed to do there. So I'll do that this summer.
Lovely.
And yeah, we'll see you all next Friday, and we'll either be drinking even more heavily than we are tonight, or I suppose we could be drinking heavily because we're happy. I literally have no idea.
On the plus side, I only have a 3-day work week tomorrow, so I might actually get to watch the game live.
All right. Well, I hope you do. I hope it's a good one. I hope that the Sharks do way better than we think that they're going to. We just have to be realistic about these things. Otherwise, we're Kevin Kurz, and nobody wants to be Kevin Kurz, not even Kevin Kurz. So I'm Ben. He's Colin.
Neither of us are Kevin Kurz.
Alex is calling for a San Jose Sharks sweep. And we'll see you all next Friday to see where we are in that. Say goodbye, Colin.
Goodbye, Colin.
Goodbye, Colin.